her hands and groaned. Of course it had to be him. He of the brilliant, sharp-toothed smiles and dangerously disarming charm. She'd almost forgotten what he truly was. A wolf in, well, wolf's clothing. Her protector and her enemy. Hold on, Rihanna, and for the love of Jupiter, don't do anything stupid. I'm coming. Chapter 5. She was coming back to him. Rickle peered at the holoscreens as the small transport vessel came into view. It was still thousands of kuliks away, but it was making good time. She had been as good as her word. Rickle hadn't expected anything less. She was a soldier, just like him. She understood duty, but she also knew how to adapt to the situation. His Ashika was no fool. Rickle found a seat, removing his large weapons and resting them on the floor as he sat down, keeping them within easy reach. He propped his legs up on an instrument panel as the freighter pilots looked at him in alarm. The control and navigation room of the freighter was surprisingly small for a vessel of this size. It was located on the uppermost level of the ship, and it was staffed by a team of about 6 human pilots who rotated in teams of 2, taking turns to monitor the freighter's navigation systems. Rickle glanced back at Gerald. The warrior sat discreetly in one corner, his plasma rifle resting on his lap. His orange eyes burned through the darkness, taking in every little detail. Like most of Rickle's colleagues, Gerald was a silent, stoic bastard at the best of times. He didn't talk much, and he wasn't interested in getting friendly with the natives. "I'll take over here," Rickle offered, nodding towards the human pilots, who suddenly seemed very absorbed in their data. "Go and stretch your legs. The rest of the cargo holds still need checking."
"You sure?"
Gerald's voice was deep and slightly hoarse, as if he hadn't used it for a very long time. He shot Rickle a pointed look, raising a questioning eyebrow.
"No problem."
Rickle shrugged, but didn't offer any explanations. No doubt Gerald had his questions. The fact that Rickle was actually offering to do this kind of work was more than a little odd. Rickle had a reputation for being a bit of a restless bastard. In the early days, his inability to sit still had driven the general nuts.
"Hmm,"
Gerald grunted, and rose up out of his seat. He didn't ask any more questions, instead offering Rickle a grateful nod. They all hated this sort of simple watchwork, but it had to be done. The warrior disappeared into the shadows as Rickle stretched, enjoying the feeling of his once again intact skin and exo-armor. His superficial burns were completely healed. In the end, the process had barely taxed his nanites. Whatever that human had hit him with had been powerful. The missile's blast had ended up melting a crater-like hole in the metal floor. Rickle shook his head. Fucking humans and their strange weapons.
"Oi, human."
He nodded towards one of the humans, a generously proportioned man with a shock of wild curly hair.
Yes?
"How long until the transport gets here?"
The human blinked, appearing a little shocked that Rickle was actually talking to him. Rickle attempted a smile, baring his fangs. From what he'd observed, humans placed a great deal of emphasis on body language, and small pleasantries seemed important to them. The human paled.
It's about 2 hours away."
"That doesn't mean anything to me. How long in universal units?"
The human's expression went blank as he did some mental calculations.
"About 50 chalens," he blurted.
"Ah."
Rickle leaned back, putting his hands behind his head.
"In that case, I'm going to catch some shut-eye. Don't wake me up unless there's an emergency."
He'd been taught to be opportunistic when it came to sleep. But if anyone tried anything, he'd be awake in the blink of an eye, his hands flying to his weapons. He closed his eyes and drifted off into nothingness, wondering what would come to him this time. Images of broken worlds and darkness flashed through his mind, interspersed with nothingness. He saw cowed alien populations suffering in silence. He saw the facility where he'd been dismantled and remade, his memories stripped from him as they'd tried to break him. It was so clear in his mind's eye, a black, sinister structure on a remote planet, its pale, dusty landscape more barren and desolate than that of Kithia itself. They'd erred. They'd made him so strong they couldn't break him. They'd made all of them like that. They'd tried to break him. They'd failed time and time again. He'd been angry, unanchored, and wild. How he'd fought at first. It had taken a certain general to pull him into line.
Patience, Rickle. There will come a time when everything shall change, but for now, we must serve the Empire.
His thoughts drifted again as the slipstream of time became distorted. He was on the ice plains again. He didn't know why, but he felt at home here. It was the only place in his dreams that didn't feel painful or chaotic. The coldness on his bare skin was invigorating. His hair was long, and it was whipped around his face by the fierce howling winds. The wildness of the place made his heart sing. He walked across the barren plains of the Vol, until darkness overtook him again. Rickle drifted in and out of dreams, existing in a forgotten place somewhere between the void and the icy wilderness, until human voices pulled him back to the surface. He opened his eyes and found that nothing had changed. His human companions hadn't dared move since he'd fallen into a half-sleep.
"They have arrived," he said softly,
causing both humans to turn, their eyes wide. He'd startled them. Humans. They were such a flighty species, their thoughts easily betrayed by their body language.
"Hendrix 2, this is the Arawen, requesting permission to dock."
The male voice that greeted them was an unfamiliar one.
"Come aboard, Arawen. Docking Bay 3's airlock is open and ready."
"This is a drop-off only. We won't be staying."
The human pilot glanced warily at Rickle.
"Yeah, we figured."
There was a resignation in his tone.
"Where is Docking Bay 3?
Rickle asked softly, turning to the second navigator. She raised her brown eyes, hesitating.
"I just want to say hello to the sergeant."
He tried to sound reassuring. He probably wasn't doing it right, because the woman just stared at him as if he were mad.
"Show me the map," Rickle said, leaning forward.
The woman nodded and hastily brought up a three-dimensional representation of the freighter on the nearest holoscreen. "Docking Bay is down here." She pointed to a red marker in the lower regions of the ship.
"Good."
Rickle rose to his feet, retrieving his weapons and sheathing them. He activated his comm, an implant behind his ear that threaded directly into his auditory nerve.
"Anyone feel like doing me a favor and taking over in the navigation room for a while?"
He sent his message out to the other 5 First Division warriors who were busy prowling the decks. Including the general, there were 10 of them in total. But Callan, Loden, and Nithian had become separated from them during the chaos and had somehow landed on Earth, apparently in the company of some crazy-sounding human female. The general had returned to Kithia to take care of some mysterious business, taking a captured human female with him. The general rarely explained himself, but he always had his reasons, and 99% of the time, he was right. Rumor had it that something big was about to go down on the dark planet. So, including Rickle, that left six of them on board the Hendrix II. That wasn't anything out of the ordinary. They were used to working without Tarak al-Alkadian, and being left behind to carry out missions on distant planets was nothing new, although they usually had their own stealth fighter, Dark Shadow. Tarak expected them to handle the situation on their own. The plan had been for them to control the situation on Fortuna Tau, eliminate the Zargek down to every last skittering larvae, and await backup from Sector 8. The General had even been contemplating capturing the mining station for his own purposes. That had sounded as easy and straightforward as a walk on the Vol, until some cognitively deficient humans had decided they would be better off destroying their own mining station by setting off a bomb. Ah, humans. Those Kyene-cursed, ignorant, primitive, meddling, sub-advanced, irrational life forms. Aaron, of course, was the exception. If the humans had left well enough alone, Rickle and his brothers could have contained the infestation on Fortuna Tau. But the Zargek were on Earth now, and humans had only themselves to blame.
"You dodging the shit jobs again, Rick?"
It was Kale who answered first, in his usual gruff voice.
"I'm just going down to check out the new arrival. Our sergeant is back."
"Ah." Kale sounded amused. "Your pet human."
"Call her that again, and I'll deck you," Rickle snapped,
surprised at how defensive he sounded. Kale responded with a wry snort.
"We've all seen how you look at her, as if she's your goddess-given property already."
"I just prefer dealing with her over some of the other humans."
Rickle tried to justify his actions.
"She's one of the rational ones."
"Hmm." For a moment, Kale said nothing more.
"So, are you going to come and take over here or not? Or would you prefer going down to the docking bay to check out the incoming yourself?"
Kale hesitated. Rickle smirked. Kale didn't do well with pleasantries and small talk, and he didn't like dealing with other aliens, especially humans. Kale was an irritable bastard at the best of times.
"Just go, Kale."
This time it was Taurine who chimed in.
"You're the closest to the navigation deck, and we all know Rhea has to be there to greet his female."
"She's not my female," Rickle grated.
Why was everyone on his case all of a sudden?
"We just have a good working relationship, that's all."
"If that's what you want to call it."
Now Gerald cut in, sounding darkly amused.
"I'll deck you too, Gerald."
"I'll spar with you any time, pretty boy."
"Get your ugly ass over here, then."
Kale cleared his throat, interrupting their verbal sparring.
"I'll cover for you, if it means you'll stop your jabbering and leave me in peace. But you owe me."
His voice was a low rumble.
"And if anyone wants to spar, you know where to find me."
"I will be taking you up on that offer."
Rickle grinned.
"Too much energy for your own good," Kale muttered. "See you in a sieve."
There was a soft beep, indicating that he'd signed off.
"Hey, Rhea?"
Taurine's voice was quizzical.
"What in Kyene's hells have you done to all the humans?"
"What are you talking about?"
"Every time I walk past a human now, they look at me as if I'm Kyene himself, risen from the underworld. They reek of fear and hatred."
"That's nothing new," Rickle shrugged. "But I might have reinforced a little lesson about consequences. Some ambitious humans tried to ambush me down in the cargo hold, so I just showed them what would happen if they tried to fuck with us again."
Only a matter of time before they start to get desperate, Taurine warned. There are thousands of them, and only six of us. Right now, it's just fear holding them in check. Only so long that will work.
Then, I hope the leaders of Earth have decided to let us go and play on their fair planet.
Rickle bared his fangs, causing the two human navigators to glance at him in alarm.
Give them some time to get acquainted with the Zargek, Gerald said. They'll cave soon enough. They always do.
Chapter 6 The Arwen hovered in the airlock as repressurization took place. Once the lights flashed green, the large double doors slid open and they glided into the docking bay. Erin was up before they touched down, unstrapping her safety harness and jumping to her feet. She was edgy. The whole damn flight had made her edgy. She had too much time to herself, and she'd been consumed by thoughts of hypothetical invasions, insects that could survive nuclear blasts, and Cordolians who could cut swaths through squads of seasoned peacekeepers. Not to mention the damned intelligence people. They wanted her to gather data on the Cordolians. How the hell was she supposed to do that without putting herself in mortal danger? Even the friendly ones were killers.
Good luck, Sergeant.
The captain was a grizzled old veteran called Baraka, who had a laconic way about him.
We'd stick around, but... Actually, there's no way in hell you'd convince me to stick around, even if you paid me half the Dalu stones in the universe. You're a brave lady, Varga.
He peered at his monitors, which provided an overview of the dimly lit loading dock. Empty cargo containers lined the dock, and large plates of refined armium metal were scattered across the polished floor. They must have been left behind when the cargo crew had hastily dumped all excess weight just before they'd left Fortuna Tau. There was no point in trying to move them now. The things probably weighed about a ton each. At least they hadn't been scattered across the landing pad. The dock was eerily empty, illuminated only by backup lighting. She hadn't exactly been expecting a welcoming party, but this was a little bit creepy. Sighing, Erin slung her pack over her shoulder and raised a hand. See you planet side, boys. Baraka and his navigator, a kid called Loic, nodded towards her, carefully keeping their expressions neutral. Erin could guess what they were thinking. They probably half expected her not to return. But she couldn't afford to think like that. She had every intention of returning to Earth.
We'll open the lower hatch when you're in the exit pod.
Baraka gestured towards Loic.
Kid, go with her, and make sure nothing follows her onto our ship.
His expression betrayed his unease.
Take the bolt auto rifle from the weapons hold and shoot anything with more than two legs.
We haven't found any Zargek on the freighter, Erin reassured him. The captain was getting a little jumpy. Abandoned, dimly lit loading docks and rumors of flesh-eating alien insects could do that to a soul.
I'm not taking any chances, Baraka growled. Go with her, kid.
Got it, sir.
Loic unfolded his long limbs from the navigator's seat and shuffled after Erin. They passed through the main cabin and climbed down a metal ladder that led to the lower levels. The Arwen was a standard-issue Federation transport vessel. The interior was Spartan, but well-maintained. It was the same transport that had been used to retrieve Erin from the freighter and bring her down to Earth to attend the Senate Committee. Loic disappeared for a few seconds, returning with a long rifle in his hands. They reached the lower exit pod, passing through a small airlock. Loic glanced around, searching for unseen threats. The exit pod was bathed in harsh white light, in contrast to the shadowy world Erin was about to enter.
Loic looked up at a monitoring camera and gave Baraka the okay signal.
"Looks like this is where we leave you, Sergeant."
The captain's rough voice filtered through a set of hidden speakers. Aaron glanced at the ceiling and nodded. There was a whoosh as the outer doors slid open. Loic stepped back, his gun raised, his eyes darting back and forth as he peered across the empty dock. A ramp extended from the ship to the floor below. As Aaron prepared to exit down the ramp, a shadow appeared in the corner of her vision. She swore, dropping her pack and reaching inside her jacket for her bolt pistol. The shadow turned into a dark blur, whipping past her in a rush of cold air. Loic cried out in alarm as Aaron spun, raising her gun. Her heart hammered in her chest and her mouth went dry. It all happened too quickly. One minute she was about to step off the Arawen and into a deserted docking bay. The next minute, she was standing face to face with her favorite nightmare.
"Hello, Aaron."
Rickles smiled, his pearly white fangs gleaming in the bright light. Loic's bolt rifle was in his hands. The navigator had backed off into the corner, his eyes wide with terror. "Rickle," Aaron snapped, exasperation creeping into her voice as she struggled to control her rapidly beating heart. Where the hell had he come from?
"What are you doing?"
Loic was staring at her as if she were barking mad. Rickle's smile widened. How he managed to be the perfect combination of friendly and menacing was beyond her.
"And here I thought you'd be happy to see me."
His golden eyes roamed over her figure, and Aaron resisted the urge to zip up her leather flight jacket. How dare he check her out so insolently, so blatantly, as if this was some kind of intimate liaison? Aaron settled for pointing her gun at his head. It gave her a false sense of control, even though she knew he could probably disarm her in the blink of an eye. Heat rose under her collar, and Aaron was grateful for the modified military-issue Syntech suit she wore underneath her jacket. It covered her from neck to toe and was specifically tailored to her biometrics. She much preferred it to the bulky peacekeeper armor she usually wore, especially on long flights from Earth to space.
"Maybe I'd be happier to see you if you greeted me normally instead of staging an ambush."
"Ah."
Rickle lowered the stolen bolt rifle. It hung lazily in his hand as his expression turned serious.
"Please understand that if an unknown vessel enters my domain, I have to run a full check. You'd be surprised at what we find on board some ships. Besides, if the Federation has been kind enough to send us a vessel with atmospheric re-entry capabilities, then we have to take advantage of that, don't we? You would do the same thing, Sergeant."
Aaron returned Rickle's molten stare with a cold look. She could see the logic in his reasoning, but she wasn't about to admit that to him.
I thought you'd agreed to let us go," Loic blurted, appearing crestfallen. "Just like last time."
Rickle turned, raising a pale eyebrow.
"Nothing in the universe is guaranteed, human. Last time, you were taking Aaron to Earth for a little visit. Now that she's back, there's no reason for me to allow you to leave."
Loic stared up at the ceiling.
"You hear that, Baraka?"
In response, the doors began to slide closed. Rickle raised the bolt rifle, aiming at Loic's head. He looked up at the ceiling, his eyes traveling in the same direction as Loic's.
"Whatever you're contemplating, I wouldn't," he warned.
Baraka would have received that message loud and clear. The metal doors shuddered to a halt, leaving a narrow, person-sized gap.
"So, what's the plan, Rickle?"
Aaron's tone was frosty, and completely at odds with how she felt inside. It wasn't just fear. She'd seen enough of Rickle to know that he wasn't an indiscriminate killer. Unlike the rumors she'd heard about Cordolians, he wasn't unhinged or needlessly cruel or sadistic. He could be ruthless and coldly pragmatic underneath that deceptively playful demeanor, but he posed no danger to her. A few misguided members of her squad had tried to kill him. That's why they'd ended up dead, the poor souls.
"We're going to wait to hear from your leaders," Rickle informed her. "When they understand that they have no choice in the matter, we will go down there and hunt. In the meantime, I'm commissioning this transport."
"You're not to harm the captain or his navigator," Aaron growled. She'd resigned herself to the fact that Rickle wasn't letting this one get away. Rickle managed to look slightly offended.
"Of course not."
Again, he lowered the bolt rifle, sparing poor Loic, who had turned pale, his skin glistening with a faint sheen of sweat. Rickle managed to look so perfectly innocent and affronted that Aaron was overtaken by a strange urge to laugh. This damn alien was confusing her. Her eyes wandered. She couldn't help it. Rickle's stance was relaxed. He appeared at ease, despite the fact that a high-powered bolt rifle dangled from one of his hands. Aaron took stock of the various weapons adorning his muscular frame, noting the longsword sheathed at his back and the two plasma guns strapped to his sides. Complementing these were numerous small blades, ranging in size from small throwing knives no longer than her hand, to a large dagger that Aaron knew had a vicious serrated edge. She knew because she'd seen him in action, slaughtering Zargek with fierce and savage precision as she directed the workers of Fortuna Tau to safety. Fuck it. If he was going to stare, then she would stare back. Her eyes traveled up his body, taking in his honed figure. That exo-armor of his was a remarkable thing, molding to his body like a thick second skin, leaving little to the imagination. Like all of the Cordolian warriors, Rickle was lean and sculpted, with broad shoulders tapering to a narrow waist. He moved with graceful economy and deadly silence. And, even though Aaron had seen him single-handedly take down a fully grown Zargek with just that long Kalidum blade of his, she suspected she didn't know half of what he was truly capable of. Scary, scary creature that he was. Their eyes met, and Aaron couldn't help but notice that he had very long, very pretty eyelashes. They were the color of winter snow in the moonlight, and they framed eyes of brilliant gold. Aaron's heart thudded against her ribcage, but her gun hand never wavered. She was stuck in an exit pod with a scared young navigator and a lethal warrior from the other side of the universe who was too damn pretty for his own good. Who had just killed 7 of her people? Who had a face that was straight out of some fanciful ancient Earth fantasy tale. He was nothing short of exquisite. In another reality, he could have been mistaken for a dark elf or one of the fae folk. Looks could be deceiving. Aaron tried to picture Rickle decapitating her man Harris. Why was that so hard for her to imagine? "We need to talk," she said, meeting his golden stare. "In private." She had things to discuss with Rickle, but she didn't want to talk about them here. The last thing she needed was for Loic to freak out and report her to the Federation. The kid looked at her with wide eyes, as if she were a madwoman juggling fission grenades. Rickle's smile returned, and this time the menace was diluted with unexpected warmth.
"Oh, yes, we do need to talk in private. Let me just organize these humans and search their vessels. Then I'm all yours, Sergeant."
That's when Baraka came barreling down the corridor, brandishing a fucking rocket launcher of all things.
"Get the hell off my ship, Cordolian," he snarled, "or I'll blow you to bits."
"Not this again," Rickle groaned, as a resigned expression crossed his elegant features. "Put it down, Baraka," Aaron said evenly, keeping her gun trained on Rickle. "What do you really think you're going to achieve by setting that thing off in here? You want all of us to die?" Chapter 7. The old human was jumpy, and he was acting irrationally.
"I've already been shot at by one of those," Rickle informed him. "Hurts like a bitch. It won't kill me, but it will kill you, and him, and her."
As soon as he'd uttered them, the words left a poisonous aftertaste in his mouth. The thought of Aaron being in such immediate danger raised a powerful emotion in him. He was overwhelmed with the sudden urge to slit the foolish old man's throat. The desire to kill was so strong that Rickle's hands began to tremble. It came from a deep, dark place he hadn't even known existed. In that moment, he felt that he would destroy Earth and the universe and even the underworld itself should anything happen to her. Goddess, where had that thought come from? He took a deep breath and tried to calm himself, all the while staring directly at the old man, who was also shaking, but for different reasons. Maybe Aaron sensed his killing intent, because she stepped forward, lowering her gun and placing a gentle hand on the old human's shoulder. "Not now, Baraka. He's right. What you're doing doesn't make sense. Give the launcher to me, and nobody will get hurt." Her voice was soft, yet authoritative, infinitely calming, and addictive. If she spoke to him using that tone, Rickle would do anything for her. She looked at him then, and he found himself lost in eyes of perfect crystalline blue. "Hold," she seemed to say. Everything froze, and it was as if he were standing on the Vol again, surrounded by the eternal comfort of the icy, unrelenting wind. With just a look, she held Rickle's killing intent at bay. "Baraka," Aaron said again, her voice barely a whisper. "Give it to me." The old man hesitated, but Rickle could sense that his urge to fight was gone. Slowly, the human lowered his weapon from where it rested on his shoulder. It was a long, tubular thing, requiring two hands to support and operate it. It was the same type of weapon that fur-faced human had shot him with, back down in the cargo hold. Aaron slid her small bolt gun into a holster beneath her jacket and took the launcher from the old man. She handled it with ease, propping it up on her shoulder and using one hand to expertly manipulate its controls. A flashing red light to one side turned amber, then flickered off. "It's disarmed," she said, pinning Rickle with a pointed stare. The old man glared at him malevolently, but he didn't say anything. His hands were still trembling. The darkness that seethed inside Rickle slowly withdrew, and rational thought returned to him. He glowered at the human captain and his junior. "Get out," he snapped, nodding sharply towards the doors. "I need to speak with the sergeant alone."
"We're not leaving her alone with the likes of you."
The old man had found his spine again. "It's okay, Baraka," Aaron reassured him. "He won't do anything to me." She lowered the disarmed rocket launcher, resting its solid base on the floor. The pointed end was propped up against the curve of her hip. The delicious lines of her body drew Rickle's gaze. A fitted black jacket concealed her arms and torso, but underneath, her legs were encased in a form-fitting black material, that left little to the imagination. He liked this outfit much better than her boring peacekeeper's uniform. Erin noticed the direction of his gaze and signified her irritation with a minuscule shake of her head. "Go on," she said to the other humans. "I'll be out shortly. If it makes you feel any better, I've got this, and I know how to use it." She tapped the body of the rocket launcher. Baraka grumbled under his breath, staring daggers at Rickle as he shuffled past, squeezing between the half-closed doors of the ship. His gangly subordinate followed him. Rickle's sword hand twitched, but he forced himself to be still. Once again, he suppressed his natural instincts. "So," Rickle said slowly, his gaze traveling upwards, noticing the way her suit molded to her body. Her jacket was open at the front, and he caught a tantalizing glimpse of skin at the entrance of her suit, where the black material ended in a V just between her breasts. "We are in private. You wanted to talk?" Her eyes turned hard, like chips of glass. Her jaw was set at a stubborn angle, and her face had lost all of its wonderful softness. "You killed 7 of my people," she said. "Why?" She was as direct as ever. No embellishment, no excuses, and no tiptoeing around the issue. No fear. He loved that about her. "Ah." He'd known this was going to be a sticking point. Erin stood, with hand still resting on the rocket launcher. She was alert and as straight as an arrow, her long neck extended, her shoulders set in a rigid line, her chin thrust forward. She didn't just expect an answer, she demanded one. Rickle breathed in and caught a trace of something impossible. It was the scent of vast oceans and atmospheric storms. It was the warmth of a planet blessed by the light of a benevolent sun. It was Earth. It was her. As if in a trance, he took a step forward and leaned close to her. "I'm really not as bad as you think," he murmured, searching her face for any sign of a reaction. She gave him nothing. She was as hard and constant as the frozen ice plains of his home planet. They were the lands he half remembered and longed for without really understanding why. "Don't look at me like that," he wanted to say. "I'm not your enemy." "I didn't kill them all," he sighed, his voice filled with a strange yearning. "Just one of them. The rest are locked up in a cargo container in the hold." "They attacked you?" "Yeah." "They shouldn't have," she said, disapproval creeping into her voice. "Yeah," he agreed. He nodded towards the rocket launcher. "The guy I killed shot one of those at me." "An EI rocket? And you survived that?" Her expression was an odd mixture of disbelief, horror, and fascination. "As I said, it hurt." He winced, remembering the sensation of his skin as it peeled, charred by the heat of the blast. Erin shook her head ruefully. "You're something else." "Something else indeed. Freak, aberration, abomination." Rickle shrugged. "I've been called all of those things, and worse. Certain habits are hardwired into me. If you go after me, chances are you'll be dead before either of us realize what's happened. That's what happened to your man. I acted on instinct. There was no time to think about it."
"You showed restraint when it came to the others."
Her expression softened, and some of the tension left her shoulders.
"You could easily have killed them."
She was right. It would have been like swatting Vakandik flies. Bothersome, but not difficult.
"Wasn't worth the effort," Rickle lied.
It had actually been harder not to kill them.
They were lightweights, easy to read and poorly organized. It would have been a waste of my energy.
Huh. Erin shook her head. And here I thought we were competent when it came to close quarters combat.
Against normal opponents, you probably are. It's just that I'm a First Division warrior, and you're human.
Rickle angled his gaze, studying her. This close, he could appreciate the little things, like the fine texture of her pale skin and the steady pulse beating in her elegant neck. Her hair had always amazed him. It was pale and golden, like fine Veronian silk. He wanted to bury his nose in it and run his fingers through it.
I attended the Senate committee, as you requested.
Abruptly, she changed the subject.
And you came back.
Rickle smiled. In a universe full of cutthroats, turncoats, and bastards who would sell their soul to Cain himself for a handful of credits, she was a rarity.
What did you expect me to do? Run away and hide on Earth? Those are my people, and I'm here to make sure you stick to your word.
I understand honor, Rickle said softly. Why did he feel he had to prove himself to her?
If your leaders hurry up and figure out that we're crucial to eliminating the Zargek, we will let the hostages go unharmed, and life will move on. But until then, we play the game. Are we close to an agreement yet, Sergeant Erin?
Probably, but I can't make any guarantees. I can't sway a Senate committee. I'm just a soldier.
You're much more than that, he murmured under his breath,
speaking in Cordolian. Erin narrowed her glacial eyes as lust coiled its glorious tendrils around Rickle's heart, stoking the fires of his arousal. As if sensing his intent, she stepped away, hefting the rocket launcher over her shoulder in one swift, powerful motion.
It's nice to know my EI missile hurts like a bitch, as you say, she said darkly. Even if it won't kill you, if you dare say what I think you're thinking, I'll burn you.
Rickle cringed. He'd just been caught out by his favorite human, and it didn't seem like she was about to reciprocate his feelings anytime soon. At this rate, he was going to develop fucking mating fever for real. He stepped aside with an ironic bow, gesturing towards the exit.
After you, Sergeant.
Her icy glare warmed his wretched black heart. As she bent and retrieved the pack that lay at her feet, Rickle's calm went off.
Hey, Rick.
It was Dragic, one of the First Division warriors who'd been patrolling the lower decks.
Need your sword arm down here. We've got Zargek incoming, right at the bottom. Nice little hull breach, too. Oxygen's being sucked out into the never-never.
Rickle swore.
How many? You know how it is. Could be 10, could be 100, could be 1,000. Depends whether one decides to spill its larvae.
I hear you, brother.
Rickle squeezed through the doors and started to run. He flashed past Erin, who was walking across the floor, briefly touching both of his hands against her curved waist. Just because he could. She spun in alarm.
Where are you going?
Lower decks, he yelled over his shoulder. We've officially got an infestation. Whatever you do, don't follow me, and keep your people out of the way, and tell your fucking leaders to hurry up and give us smooth passage to Earth.
The time for attempting diplomatic niceties was over. For whatever reason, the humans were delaying to give them an answer. If the humans didn't understand the game now, they never would. And the appearance of Zargek on the freighter had just changed the game entirely.
Where the hell had they come from?
He'd thought the freighter was clear. But when it came to the Zargek, one could never be too sure. All it took was a few stray larvae with blood in their bellies. They could latch on and build their cocoons anywhere. And once they metamorphosed into mature Zargek, they would wreak havoc. If they were on the freighter, they had to get rid of them as quickly as possible. Against mature Zargek, the humans didn't stand a chance. Chapter 8. Aaron ran up to the main cargo hold on the central decks, where the majority of the Fortuna Tau survivors had made themselves comfortable. Most of the escapees from the asteroid mining station were ordinary people, miners, maintenance workers, engineers, and service people. They weren't equipped with the skills or knowledge to fight aliens, especially when said aliens were indestructible monsters who could withstand close-range fire from a small explosive incendiary missile. Freaks, the lot of them. Are you fucking serious? That had been her first thought when Rickle had told her the story. Aaron shook her head as she ran, balancing the launcher on her shoulder. It had a small notch across its barrel that fit nicely over her shoulder, keeping it stable. It was a familiar, comfortable weapon, one that required strength and stamina to wield, but no real skill. Anyone could blow shit up. All you had to do was pull the trigger. Aaron reached a service elevator and slapped her hand against the activation panel. Baraka and the kid had retreated back into the Arawin, but not before Aaron had ordered the people in the navigation room to keep Docking Bay 3 closed. The Arawin would not depart the freighter, even though that went against their orders. Screw the Federation, especially since they were doing nothing but sitting on their hands, paralyzed by public opinion and caught up with their stupid committees. A vessel capable of atmospheric re-entry was a handy thing to have, especially when one was being overrun by monsters. Monsters. Both the Zargek and the Cordolians. Especially Rickle. Her body burned with the lingering memory of his touch. It had been ever so brief and whisper light, but he'd definitely caressed her waist as he'd swept past. He'd run out of the docking bay like a dark whirlwind, yelling something about Zargek invading the lower decks. It had almost felt like he was itching to join the fight. The elevator reached the central floor, and Aaron dashed towards the cavernous space that held the majority of the passengers. The main doors were wide open, and the first thing that hit her was the sound. It was a cacophony of thousands of voices, combining to create a deafening buzz. Aaron navigated the endless rows of empty cargo containers, most of which had been claimed and occupied. People sat inside them, having procured basic bedding, food, and home comforts from Jupiter knows where. The sound of someone plucking a slightly out-of-tune guitar reached her ears, accompanied by the smell of roasted space sausage. Seriously, where the hell had these guys found the time to procure all this stuff? They were supposed to have been fleeing a doomed mining station, not strolling through a county fair. As Aaron darted through the crowds, she scanned the space for any sign of Zargek. At least nobody was screaming. That meant the central decks were probably safe for now. People stared at her curiously as she passed, but most of them had seen her face on Fortuna Tau, so they didn't pay her much attention. She eventually made her way across the giant area, locating the small guard room at the back. Through the brightly lit floor-to-ceiling glass windows, she recognized several familiar faces. Aaron narrowed her eyes in disapproval as she slapped her palm on the door panel and entered the room. Five grown-ass men turned in her direction, guilty looks plastered across their faces. "What the hell is this?" Aaron demanded, wrinkling her nose at the smell of stale juvie smoke. The five peacekeepers were seated around a makeshift table constructed from packing crates.
In the middle of the table was a half-empty bottle of whiskey, which sat atop a scattered mass of playing cards. None of them were wearing their comm devices. That's why they hadn't answered her alerts. Erin touched the small comm that sat in her ear, making sure it wasn't loose.
"Sarge, you're back!"
The man sitting closest to her, a tattooed gunner called Nguyen, rose to his feet, giving her a sloppy salute.
"We were just, celebrating the end of the world."
Private Holmes raised the bottle, offering it to her.
"You wanna join?"
"You're supposed to be keeping watch," Erin grumbled, pinning each of them with a hard stare. The men's faces were flushed, their eyes unfocused. She noticed an empty bottle of whiskey lying under the packing crates. "Being intoxicated on duty is a Capital One offense. You could go to military prison for that."
"Who the fuck cares?" Private Marat slurred, taking another swig of the bottle. "We're all going to die. The Federation's sitting on their asses because we of a race have forgotten how to fight a good war. And either way, we're fucked. You heard what happened to Harris and the others? His head's sitting in the cryo-freeze. And next, they're going to come after us. Won't be long until the real Cordolian fleet shows up. And then what? We get shipped off to Sector One as slaves? We stay on Earth and get eaten by Zargek?"
"We're soldiers, Marat. We're not paid to think about the hypotheticals. Although, I'm sorry about Harris." Her voice softened. Even though he'd been a hot-headed idiot, Harris had been a part of their team, and there would be someone on Earth who would miss him. Erin frowned as the five men stared at her, bleary-eyed. In their current intoxicated state, she wouldn't trust any of them with a bolt gun. They'd probably end up shooting innocent civilians. "Your job is to follow orders and protect your people, no matter what. We don't get to make decisions about the fate of the human race."
"Who needs protecting?" Marat jeered. "We're all just trying to enjoy our last moments of freedom."
Erin resisted the urge to slap some sense into him. She'd only been off the freighter for 2 days, and during that time, the situation seemed to have devolved into chaos. At the beginning, fear and a common purpose had kept them together. Now, it had all gone to shit. Soon, they'd start running out of food and supplies. The sanitation units would fail, and water would become scarce. The freighter wasn't designed to handle masses of people. Soon, the real fun would begin. Humanity didn't do well when it was crammed into a metal box. "Where are the other squads?" Erin demanded. She needed someone who could work with her right now. Someone sensible. Someone sober.
"Beats me."
Nguyen gave her a blank look.
"Probably gone off to get laid or hoard up all the spike before it runs out and we all start getting withdrawals."
"Arg!" Mentally, Erin groaned, but she didn't allow her frustration to show. Instead, she strode across to the table, picked up the half-empty bottle of whiskey, and tipped it out. The amber liquid splashed all over the playing cards and trickled onto the floor. "Sober up," she snapped. "If we're going down, we're going down as peacekeepers, not drunkards." All five men opened their mouths to protest, but Erin shot them a dark look. "If you're not sober by the time I come back, I'll have you court-martialed." She turned on her heel and left the guardroom, just as the sound of fighting reached her ears. Out in the central hold, people were shouting and screaming. Someone was swearing at the top of his lungs. Erin ran, her fingers dancing across the control panel of the rocket launcher as she set it to activate. She did it without looking.
If she had to, she could have done it in the dark with her eyes closed. She reached an area where some of the cargo containers had been moved off the tracks to create a makeshift clearing. In the center of the clearing, surrounded by onlookers, a man and a woman were going at it. The man had the typical look of a space miner. He was bare-chested, with crude tattoos decorating both of his generous, hairy pectorals. His forearms were the size of small tree trunks, and his bald head was coated with a sheen of sweat.
"Give it back!"
he roared, swinging a wild punch at the woman. The woman danced out of his way, her dark braids whipping around her face as she easily evaded his meaty fist. "I didn't take it!" she shouted, staring daggers at her attacker. "You're delusional, Grogan!" A tight ring of people had formed around the two fighters. Erin thought she even saw some miners discreetly exchanging bets. She rolled her eyes. Without proper order and structure, the situation had rapidly descended into a regular shit fight. On Fortuna Tau, they'd had rules, routines, and consequences. Space mining attracted a rough crowd, but they were kept in line by the fact that if they didn't cooperate, they would lose their jobs. Now, they had nothing to lose. Erin squeezed through the crowd, using the weight of her pack and the mean appearance of her rocket launcher to force people to step aside. She reached the edge of the ring and dropped her pack. She rested the launcher on the floor beside the pack and removed her link band, stashing it in one of the pack's outer pockets. It was just in case she had to hit someone. If she broke it, it would be her third one this year, exhausting her military allocation. The damn things were expensive to buy. People respectfully stepped away from her stuff, giving her a bit of room. To her relief, there were no Zargek. This was just a common brawl, albeit a bit one-sided. Erin drew her bolt pistol from inside her flight jacket and dashed into the makeshift ring. The big man, called Grogan, was chasing the slender woman around, trying to grab her with his huge arms, but the woman was too fast. Erin saw an opening and rushed at Grogan, intercepting him as he lunged. "Stop," she said coldly, pointing the gun at his head.
"What the?"
Grogan growled. He blinked, stopping dead in his tracks.
"Stay out of this, lady."
"What's the meaning of this, Grogan?"
"None of your business, peacekeeper."
His pupils were dilated, and a network of fine red blood vessels crossed his sclera. He had the look of a long-term spike user.
"You're only acting tough because you've got that thing in your hand. Wait until you run out of bolt charge, beautiful. You won't be able to do shit."
"Oh, for fuck's sake." Erin had had enough. It had been a long day, and she'd really had enough. She stashed her gun and strode forward, catching Grogan by surprise. As she got close, she rushed at him, crouching down and grabbing one of his thick legs. Using all her strength, she lifted his leg and pushed him backwards, executing a neat single-leg takedown. Grogan cried out in alarm as he lost his balance and toppled to the ground, landing heavily on his back.
"Oof!"
The air left his lungs in a sudden whoosh as Erin brought her elbow down onto his torso in a savage blow, making him curl up into a ball. While he writhed in pain, she used her advantage to restrain him in a vicious shoulder lock.
"What was that again, citizen?"
Erin squeezed, and Grogan cried out in pain.
"Can't do shit, huh? I don't need a gun to deal with your sort. I'll ask you again, what's going on here?"
The crowd had erupted into jeers and catcalls. Erin ignored them. Grogan's face had turned red. He wheezed and spluttered.
The bitch stole my space sausage,"
he blurted, pointing his chin towards the woman, who was standing warily at the edge of the ring.
"That's bullshit," she retorted. "He blames me for everything that goes wrong. I saw it fall off the grill and into a grease gutter.
His fat ass knocked it off the grill, and he didn't even realize.
Aaron twisted Grogan's arm. I don't care whether she stole your space sausage or not. We're not going to turn into animals over a piece of artificial meat.
But...
As Aaron twisted harder, releasing some of her pent-up frustration, she noticed that the raucous cries